And Darren, if I could jump in there, it does, and we talked about this a bit yesterday, we do have the occasion where the nonprofit is the one just sort of contributing something, and they need the expertise of the outside party. And the deal I'm thinking of from a recent history here is that a nonprofit owned a bunch of bare land. And it was quite developable, had good freeway access, but the nonprofit is not a developer, but they quickly realized they could get a lot more money out of this piece of land if they developed it first rather than selling raw land. So they actually entered into a joint venture with a commercial housing developer. And that is how all the expertise and everything else showed up. It was really the developer coming in with the IP, with the know-how, nonprofit just contributed the land and got a piece of the development deal, and they went from there.
Right, and that proves the issue of everybody wants something. What does your client want? What does a nonprofit have? What does it need to get the ability to monetize whatever that is? And so it may have intellectual property. It may have property where it needs expertise. It's going to look for how can we monetize this property? How can we scale this program? How can we push it out to a larger audience? Anytime we talk about joint ventures with 501c3s, I think the first risk you have to be mindful of is how will this impact our exemption? Because obviously you don't want to get into a situation where you're going to lose your exemption because you're trying to monetize something or scale something up. So in the various flavors of joint ventures, the all exempt joint venture doesn't really present that issue. So if you've got two or more 501c3s that are getting together, it's not going to present that issue. They may, in fact, form an LLC and have it taxed as a partnership, or they may form an LLC and file a 1023 for that LLC to have it be its own tax-exempt organization. Did that a couple of years ago. We had a couple of nonprofits that were involved in a certain type of research into a neurological disease, and they wanted to make a patient registry. Great opportunity to form a new LLC with, in this case, it was three nonprofits, a funder and two active nonprofit charities who were getting together to develop this patient registry and could apply for 501c3 status. But what typically we're seeing is joint venture, we're going to talk about today, is joint ventures between 501c3 organizations and for-profit organizations. And those are the ones that you really have to be careful when you're structuring to avoid private benefit and private inurement. Because again, if you don't avoid substantial private benefit or any type of private inurement, you're running the risk of putting your exemption in jeopardy through failure of the operational test. So what issues do we look at? Who's controlling the activities? Are they a significant portion of your activities? Those are going to be key issues, both for its impact on exemption, as well as for whether you're creating UBTI. Private foundations have one additional wrinkle when they're dealing with joint ventures. They need to be mindful of, is this a jeopardizing investment under 4944 or an excess business holding under 4943? Because they have those additional limitations. Now, to the extent what the private foundation is doing is making a contribution into a joint, accomplish a charitable purpose, where the primary purpose is to accomplish that charitable purpose, and as opposed to the primary purpose being generation of income, and assuming it's not engaging in legislative activities or intervening in politics, it can qualify as a PRI, as a program-related investment. And of course, if it qualifies as a PRI, then your concerns over jeopardizing investments and excess business holdings go away. So keep that in mind.
Yeah, and Darren, I would just sort of jump in. Really going back to one of the earlier examples you gave of sponsored research agreements being a form of a joint venture, those in large part were often done by private foundations who would give big grants to support certain scientific research projects, drug research. And more and more you're starting to see and hear private foundations saying, hey, just in case this is a big blockbuster hit and you, our grantee are going to make billions of dollars, why don't we get a little slice of the winnings there? And they'll say, you know, instead of a grant agreement, let's make this a PRI. We'll just take, you know, 6%, I think was the one of the private letter ruling examples where a private foundation did what would typically just be a sponsored research agreement. But they said, look, if this is a big hit, we want, you know, 6% of the gross revenue from it. That really turned a grant agreement and a charitable distribution for the 5% minimum distribution requirement into a program-related investment, which, as Darren just pointed out, not an issue for jeopardizing investments. It's also excluded from the excess business holdings rules.